Good morning, everyone. This is your host, Joe Cristiano, and you're listening to Star of the Beast Network, soon to be renamed Liberty Talk Radio. And this is your morning edition. Star of the Beast Network is your independent streaming internet radio and libertarian voice, broadcasting from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Thursday, November 30th, 2006. It's around 2:31 a.m. Central Standard Time in the good old USA. And being sponsored by Ranch Acres Audiology. Call 918-749-7711 for all your hearing needs. Ranch Acres Audiology, where hearing is fashionable. We would also like to dedicate this broadcast to two organizations. The first one is Toastmasters International. Go to Toastmasters.org, click on find a club near you, and visit with them to improve your communication and leadership skills. Wonderful organization. Also, I'd like to dedicate this program to Peace House Tulsa. Go to peacehousetulsa.org. Those people are dedicated to pursuing justice through education and nonviolent action. Wonderful organization, wonderful people. This broadcast is your antidote to popular talk radio, regardless of political affiliation, where you will be expected to do more than just listen. You will be expected to think. Although we broadcast from the United States, you will find that libertarian principles of individual freedom are universal and apply to your area of residence, be it New York, Bangkok, Berlin, Rome, Paris, or Stalingrad. Folks, we must starve the beast before the beast, in the form of a bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government, starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. It's time to shed conventional thinking regarding political structures. We need to be revolutionaries in thought and dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what government is doing to our freedom will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. I'd like to mention that you can reach us live via AOL Instant Messenger at STB Internet Radio at AIM.com or Skype Internet Phone. Simply dial Star of the Beast, one word, lowercase, and you'll be on the air. Otherwise, email us at liberty@starofthebeast.net anytime. We will respond to your questions during the following broadcast. If you miss this broadcast, we will be rebroadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And now, on to our program. Good morning, everyone. That's my introduction. It's very similar. If you've heard me before, you've heard that introduction before. Someday I'll change it. I don't know. This is part three of the minimum wage issue. One which is, it's an emotional issue. It is a political issue. I'd like to start with a comment. I always have a little quip in the beginning. I'd like to start with something from the Nobel Prize recipient, Milton Friedman. He died, I think it was last 2 weeks ago. Internationally renowned economist and libertarian, and he always mentioned, "I'm a libertarian with a small L." In other words, he wasn't a party member, but he was a libertarian philosophically in every sense. And this is what he said. The government solution to a problem is usually as bad as the problem. And he is absolutely correct. When we discuss the minimum wage issue, this conjures up certain images of people working at jobs that may be distasteful to us at a wage that we would not accept under any conditions. And since we are the voting masses, they, the politicians, appeal to that emotion. And this is how they arrive, or they define constituency. I would like to read a few words from the Foundation for Economic Education. And I do recommend that you go to their website and read or download their articles. I am a member, I subscribe to their magazine, and I download their articles, and I always find them fascinating. And this will be a little lengthy, but please stay with me on this because it is a cornerstone of this broadcast. This is part three of the minimum wage issue, should be the last, and depending on how we progress, it will be, may not be the last, it may be part three of four. All right, and here it is. Some, he's talking about political people, the politicians, may actually welcome unemployment among minorities because it breeds other political and economic effects. And above all, creates a political power base for the minority champions. When jobs are scarce, they are likely to be rationed and allocated according to government plans and programs. Rationing bestows benefits to political constituents and thus confers prestige and power to the program proponents. Think of that carefully. Every time you listen to a politician propose something, keep those words in mind. Even if it has nothing to do with the minimum wage, it makes no difference. It goes on to say, some are also aware that unemployment tends to give rise to new demands for radical government intervention, for central control and planning, which may pave the way for an all-around political command system called socialism. Mass unemployment, they are hoping, will lead voters to support their ultimate objective. Now, that makes sense, because if you're now upset that you heard the word socialism and you think that I'm a nutcake and a radical because I'm a libertarian and I've just walked off the plank, think about it for a second. What is socialism? You have a centralized authority, which we call the federal government, collecting money and redistributing it. Now, what do we do here? We do exactly that. We are not so much, well, we're a democracy in that we can go to the polls and vote for a limited number of people. The government presents who they suspect will win and support their ideology, and we have a choice between the lesser of two evils. And that is our democracy. Our economic system, however, is social. It's a socialist system because a good portion, depending on your income, from 20% to 60%, goes to the government who redistributes it. That's it. Now, we do have a free economic system, free enterprise system, rather. But within that free enterprise system, we are taking advantage of. We are sold that particular premise, and then we are duped. And I think I mentioned this at another broadcast. There was a professor who spent 20 years in China as a teacher. I think it was Beijing. And he wrote an article, tongue-in-cheek, saying that if you really want to be free, go to rich China. Interesting. Please don't write me in saying, well, if you want to be Chinese or if you want to live under that, don't send me an email on that. He said tongue-in-cheek, but he had a lot of truth to that. There are a lot more freedoms in Red China than there are here in the United States. By virtue of the fact that the government slowly but surely, very slowly but surely, chips away at what we have, invests it in their pocket. They use that as their controlling mechanism. And this is nothing new. This has happened for 4,000 years with every government. We must start resisting that. We must be dissidents. I am no longer a citizen. I am a dissident. I'll probably have men knocking at my door soon, you know, and taking me away. The broadcast next time will be blank. Where is Joe? Someone took him away. Okay. I want to get back on the minimum wage issue. This is one of those deals that sounds good. It always sounds good. And things that sound good, or when the government makes it sound good, it usually runs bad. Once the government dictates or legislates who gets paid an amount of money, our freedoms have been chipped away. Now, we don't think of it that way. We say, well, geez, it's good that the government is supporting the poor people. You know, it has a heart. It's a compassionate thing to do. Well, as we discussed in the last broadcast, what in fact occurs if someone wanted to work for me, for my company, and learn the business, but because I pay things other than wages, above wages, I pay the Social Security, the FICA portion, which is 7.558%, I think it is, 7.85%, I'm sorry. And then I have benefits and other things that we do internally that's a cost to my business. So even if I paid minimum wage, I wouldn't be paying $5.15 an hour. I would be paying substantially more than that. I think I mentioned this before. If you took the average pay of the worker in GM and you took all of the benefits that they had, it averages to $84 an hour. Now, they don't receive $84 an hour, but that's what the actual cost is. We have to remember that. So if someone wanted to work for me and said, look, I want to learn the trade. I want to learn. I want to prove to you that I can be a productive employee, I would have to reject that offer simply because economically it's not worth it to me. You say, well, Joe, you may be rejecting a excellent employee who will do very well for you. How could you do that? Well, conversely, I can be spending a lot of time with an employee who doesn't pan out. And as a result, I spent a lot of time and money, and something that businesses today cannot afford to do, at least small businesses like mine. So the government says, Bobby, if you take that job, you will be in violation of the law. We have now made Bobby, who is willing to work, let's assume he wants to work for free because he wants to learn the business. The government now reclassifies Bobby as a criminal for breaking the law. And of course, I'm the one that goes to jail or gets fined. Could that happen in the context of a free nation, in a free country? Well, the answer is no, it couldn't, because you have the government telling people what they can and cannot do on a relationship between two people that harms absolutely no one and benefits both. I know it's difficult to understand that because we don't think of it that way. But then the politicians draw that line further. They say the reason why they're doing that is to protect those in poverty. What is the definition of poverty? Well, that's the absolute, when you eliminate, rather, the absolute necessities of life. Now, that's interesting because today, and I want to read you some statistics on what we call the poor or poverty. The poor by the United States possess a surprising amount of wealth. This is from the Mises Institute. It's an Austrian economics institute. Very libertarian, by the way. It says, poor by the United States government possesses a surprising amount of wealth. The official poor are not that poor after all. For example, for those people classified as poor, 46% own their own home and 76% have air conditioning. More than 66% of the poor have more than 2 rooms of living space per person. And do you know, ladies and gentlemen, around the world we have more space than anyone else. We would consider that luxury. That would be considered luxury anywhere else in the United States. The average poor in the United States citizen has more living space than the average citizen, not the poor citizen, the average citizen living in Austria, Belgium, France, Finland, Germany, Greece, Ireland, Italy, Portugal, Spain, and the United Kingdom. Now, those are the big and rich industrial nations of the world. 97% of the official American poor own a color television, and over half own more than one. 62% of the poor have either cable or satellite television. Far from being undernourished, the poor have a greater obesity problem than the rest of the population. Most common hardship that most poor people face is making late rent or utility payments. Now, these are all from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. These are not numbers that anyone made up. The point being is that the politicians take this definition, spout it out, but use the terminology of poor to emblazon that emotion that we must be compassionate to these people. Well, where do the poor come from? Well, let's not say the poor. Where do the unemployed come from? Well, primarily, you have people going to school, let's say high school, and they don't care. They don't want to study. You know, school's just not for them, man. You know, school just ain't cool, dude. And then they go out into the workplace. And we find that most of the unemployed and most of the people who are being paid minimum wage are this group of people. Now, why should the American consumer pay more money for a product because the companies are forced to pay more money in wages to someone who hasn't earned it? That's not American. If Bobby just doesn't want to learn anything, when he comes out, he may have to be educated again. But see what the government does. It's very interesting. They say, we're going to have government programs to assist these people in getting jobs. You say, well, that sounds nice. But wait a minute. The government doesn't have to provide that. Industry can provide that. And industry can provide that through training. Then the answer is, well, why don't they do it? Well, that's because I'll go back to what I was saying before. They say, well, Joe, why don't you just hire this person? This person may turn out very good, but this person may turn out to be very bad. It's a risk. And remember, if an employer releases an employee, he has to document that and be real sure and to state their case properly. If not, their unemployment insurance goes up. And mine went up hellaciously when I let someone go who was doing absolutely nothing. I said, well, I'm going to allow her to collect the unemployment, you know, because she was mentally, believe it or not very stable. I said, I don't want any trouble. And it just happened that the unemployment fund here in Oklahoma was dry. And employers literally were paying dollar for dollar out. Everything that went out, we had to pay in. And it would have been, I would have saved money if I would have kept her on the payroll, watched her carefully, and had her do work on a part-time basis for 20 hours a week. It would have been cheaper. I was not paying her minimum wage. And that was 4 years ago, and I'm still paying for her. So employers are reluctant to hire someone because if the person doesn't work out, they can pay through the nose and for a long period of time. Now, if the person doesn't work out, the employer is out a lot of time and money. Now, I have a small business. When we employ somebody, it takes a tremendous amount of resources to train that person. And there are mistakes made because they're new, you know, and the whole bit. And sometimes we lose customers. It's a risky, risky business. Now, if the person doesn't pan out and we're paying the person, let's say, just minimum wage plus the benefits and all that, and then they leave, then I have to justify why the person left so I don't pay the unemployment. You see where I'm coming from? It's not that easy. There's no risk at all on the employee's part because the employee can quit whenever they want. I ask people, say, well, if you left your employer, what legal remedy does your employer have against you? They say, well, nothing. I said, then why should you have legal remedy against your employer if they let you go because you're a slug? Good question. We never look at the other side. Because we always assume that the employer is the bad guy and the employer is going to take advantage of the person. And that's not so. Again, like I said before, when I hire someone, I mean, I treat them as royalty. Because they are the ones that are interfacing with my clients, with my customers, that took me years and years to get. Do you think I want to get a slug, a jerk, someone who doesn't care, interfacing with my client? So now, of course not. So I mean, even if I didn't want to, I would have to treat them well. Because the consequences are so costly, it can destroy my business. And that has happened to me. It literally has destroyed my business when I've hired the wrong people. I've lost that many customers until I didn't watch it close enough, didn't see it happening. All right, but let's go back to we hire Bobby, and Bobby says, now, since Bobby didn't listen and didn't learn in school, what he's doing, he's coming to the employer, and he's saying, in effect, this is in effect what he's saying, I didn't listen to school, I was a real slug, you know, I was irresponsible, I can't find a job because I really don't know anything. I don't know how to think. I hardly know how to read. But I need a job. And basically, if I don't get a job, you are going, industry will relegate me to the streets. And if I'm on the streets, there's only one way I can make some money. And that's to be a distributor of illegal substances. Now, folks, I want you to know that the actual distributors make less than minimum wage. Read the book Freakonomics. It's very interesting. They did a whole study on that. Fascinating book. The distributors make a little over $3 an hour. Because on the street all day. They don't push all day. Some days they do well. Some days they sell nothing. They literally work for less than minimum wage. But their bosses don't get thrown in jail. Because no one's supposed to be doing this. So what we do is we relegate them to the streets. And when you have a lot of unemployed males on the street, what do you have? In any country, you have crime. Gangs, which lead to fights, which lead to territories, which lead to crime. They need income to survive. And of course, they can't get a job. Right. Now, what if the same Bobby came to me and says, look, all right, guy, all right, so I'm not the brightest, you know, sharpest pencil in the drawer, but I do need a job. And I know it's a risk, but I'll work for $2 an hour for a week. You know, or I'll work for nothing. Let's do this right. You know, since you shouldn't pay me for my education, all right, take me in, train me. If I do well, hire me. I would do that. I would do that in a New York minute. Provided the government didn't say, well, you know, if you didn't hire him at the end of the week, you know, you're going to pay unemployment, blah, 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 and you got to do this and all this paperwork. I say, no, I'm not going to do it. Screw that. I don't have time for it. But what if he does? What if Bobby comes in and I go, man, this kid is good. Would I then pay him $5.15 an hour? Well, possibly. Maybe for the first month or two or three. But according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, over 90% of the people who do make minimum wage are not making minimum wage after 1 year. And what they're saying is that people, this is an entry into the labor force. And as a result of it being an entry level to labor force, once people prove themselves, they work themselves out of the minimum wage situation. So the minimum wage population is fluid. Over 90% of the people making minimum wage this year will not be making next year, which means that the people next year are the new people entering the labor force. Now, we have one of the lowest unemployments in history. Right now going on, one of the lowest unemployments. Which means that people are getting jobs. People are working. Employers are taking people in. You're going to build a little bit of a speed bump to that once you raise the minimum wage. Because then the employer says, $7 an hour to train Bobby, and then plus the benefits and the FICA and this paperwork, and the probability of him not doing well and really doing harm to my business, it may not cost me $7 an hour. It may cost me hundreds of dollars an hour. What burns me up about this whole issue is that the politicians aren't stupid. They're very clever. They know better. They know this better than I do. Many of them have had companies. Many had attorneys that had their own law practices. They know this. Do you think any of those attorneys hired a law clerk for $5.15 an hour? Of course not. Now, there may be some intern in school and whatever, and they work, you know, on Wednesday afternoon filing and stuff like that, and they pay minimum wage or $7 an hour. So, yeah, they do. And it's expected. But other than that, their legal secretaries who do most of the work, they're not going to be paid $5.15 an hour, neither $7 an hour, neither $10 an hour, neither $15 an hour. My question then to everyone out there is that if the minimum wage was critical because for people to get paid a decent salary, why isn't everyone being paid minimum wage? Why isn't every worker in the United States being paid $5.15 an hour and not one penny more? Interesting. Not one penny. Everyone, according to our politicians, everyone should be making $5.15 an hour. But you see, that violates the law of economics. And our politicians do exactly that. They ignore the law of economics. And once they interfere with it, they really foul up our economic system. And once you play with the economic system and manipulate it, everyone loses. Everyone. Okay? Geez, our 30 minutes is up, and I didn't get to exactly where I wanted to go. So next Thursday, we will have the minimum wage issue, part 4. I knew that was going to happen. I always expound a lot more. I'd like to mention also that, let me give you a station identification. This is Star of the Beast Network. This is Joe Cristiano speaking. In the next couple of weeks, and I hope I don't say this again a couple of weeks from now, but we are working in changing the station identification from Star of the Beast Network to Liberty Talk Radio. And I cannot wait because we have so much to do. And I am waiting until we have the station identification change. I don't want to do anything and then have to do it all over again. We have our new station signs, everything, our new cards. Everything that's being done is with the Liberty Talk Radio. And I think it really, it describes what this radio station is and gives us broader appeal. And we are going to really hit it running. And I'm really, truly excited about that. I do wish that our listeners would send me some email and send it at this time to liberty@starvethebeast.net. Now, that's going to change to something like, Liberty Talk Radio or something like that. I'm not sure what the exact prefix will be. But right now, it's still liberty@starvethebeast.net. Please send me your comments, your agreements, your disagreements. I love the challenges because it gives me an opportunity to respond to a challenge and to do research on it. I will not criticize anyone. And I want to make one point. My sons, I've told you before, hound the heck out of me to listen to popular talk radio. They say, well, geez, that's where I can get my information, whatever. And which I do from time to time. And I heard one of the major popular talk show hosts, who is not the worst one, in my opinion. I mean, he does have some very, very good points, and he does make some very good points. But he said something that really disturbed me, but it's very, very typical of what they do in their genre. And he said, what is happening today never happened 20 years ago. What I see happening today, he said, would never have happened 20 years ago. And he set us up by saying that. Well, quite frankly, what is happening today is probably not as bad as what happened 20 years ago. People say, well, geez, the good old days. World War II was a good old day. The Korean War, good old days. How about the Black Plague? The good old days. How about times when we didn't have penicillin? The good old days. There are no good old days, ladies and gentlemen. The good old days are now. We are living in an era of prosperity that we should be counting our blessing. And he made a point saying that because things are so bad, people are doing things today that they wouldn't have dreamt doing, even a couple of years ago, that he is astounded. And then he went on to make his point. The problem is that we buy into that. And once we buy into that everything he says is true. We give credibility to everything the person said. And it wasn't true. It was very untrue. It's like one time they said, we've got to get serious about Islamic fascism. Well, yeah. What do you think? We're laughing about it? But once they make that point, everything they say after that, they justify everything that's being said after that. And that's what I don't like about popular talk radio. If I do that myself, please send me email to liberty@starthebeast.net and tell me. Say, Joe, you goofed. You violated the major tenet of your program. And I will explain it, apologize, or redo it, okay? And I will not mention your name on the air. Okay, we are going to play our bumper song right now. And here we are. This is the end of this morning's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their support, and I'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends. And don't forget to send your comments, your criticisms, and questions to liberty@starvethebeast.net. Also, when you're on your computer, look up Toastmasters.org and Peacehouse.org, two wonderful organizations. Next Sunday, we're going to have Dr. Kirby Cundiff talk about the medical care issue. Fascinating. He's written some papers on it, and would love to hear about the healthcare issue and why we're going down the wrong path. Be fascinating. I hope that may be an hour program, and we may make it an hour program. And then next Thursday, which would be December 7th, I guess, we will have part 4 of the minimum wage issue, and we will cap it then. No more minimum wage. We've had enough of that, right, folks? Okay, thank you very much for listening in. And until next time, stay well and stay tuned.